So first, before we even begin, let's have a round of applause for all of our candidates. Okay, from my left to right, left to far left, rather, I'd like to introduce our candidates. Tobias Whitaker, who is running on the Democratic and Sydney First Independent line. Gene Pickford on the Authenticity line. John Schaefer, Republican. Gregory McCann, Republican. And Bill Heath, Democratic and Sydney First Independent line. The format for tonight is going to be 2 minutes for opening and closing statements, 90 seconds to answer each question, and then a 60-second rebuttal if necessary, if anyone wants to rebut something that one of the other candidates said. And we are going to begin with opening statements. Tobias Whitaker.
I'd like to start off by thanking WCDO and Mr. Pollack, the other candidates, and of course all of you folks for attending tonight and helping out with this event. There are a lot of familiar faces in the crowd, but for those of you who don't happen to know me, my name is Tobias Whitaker. I grew up in Sydney, actually one block from the library, went to the Sydney School District. After I graduated from Sydney, like a lot of youth in the area, I decided that I needed to go someplace bigger and better. And so I traveled around the country for quite some time until I finally realized that Sydney really was my home. And so when I came back to the area, my goal was to get involved in the community and hopefully have a positive impact so that other people that were coming up through the school system would want to end up staying in the area. I eventually ended up working at the Boys and Girls Club for 7 years. We had 500 to 800 members, depending on the specific year, and that gave me a foot into the community as far as the parents, the children, and also the collaborations that we had with other organizations within the community. After that, I ended up working at the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Council of Delaware County for a couple of years, working in 12 different school districts as well, among other things. And about that same time, I also began working with Cornell Cooperative Extension. I was on the Human Ecology Committee for 3 years as a Sydney representative, and eventually became part of their board of directors for Delaware County. And I bring that up because I feel there were some relevant issues during the job experience that would help on town board. The first one was fiscal responsibility. Cornell Cooperative Extension has a budget of 7 figures. Tri-Town Boys and Girls Club, that's a shoestring budget, and I learned a lot on both ends of the spectrum there. The other thing is conflict resolution. If any of you have ever been to a town board meeting, you know how important that is. And the other thing, probably most importantly, is empathy for the person that walks in through the door. Regardless of your political party, Republican, Democrat, any of the independent parties, you all have a voice with me. Thank you.
Okay. Next up is Greg Pickford. I'm sorry, Eugene Pickford.
That's okay. I've been called worse in my life, and hopefully a bit better. I'm one of those dangerous combinations of people that has gray hair and yet attempts to use techie equipment. A week ago, I was at my daughter's wedding, and I had the responsibility of offering a prayer, which I'd written out ahead of time. And unfortunately, halfway through the prayer, I hit the wrong button, and I was hoping the Almighty would be patient with me while I regained myself. So to help me along with that, I do have some thoughts I'd like to share with you. I've tried to, first of all, let me share with you a bit about myself. I've been a resident of Sydney for the last 12 years, the township that is. I've been a property owner for 40 years. My wife is a third generation Sydney Townshipite, or whatever the appropriate terminology would be. Her grandparents lived here, her parents lived here, and we live in the same house that both her grandparents and her parents lived here. So we do know something about the area. I've tried to summarize my thoughts about the township in an acrostic. Perhaps you've seen something of it called Upwards. And for me, the primary focus of what needs to happen is a revisitation of the comprehensive master plan that Sydney had in the year 2002. That's a 99-page document. If you take the time to read that, you will essentially find referenced in it virtually every issue that either the hamlet or the village or the town has had to grapple with over the last several years. The reason why I think it's so important is that unless you have a comprehensive context on which to make decisions, you tend to make those decisions in an isolated vacuum rather than considering the whole thing. Now, many of you here enjoy all of the dimensions that Sydney Township has to offer. Many of you are employed in the village, you live in the township, and you enjoy the countryside, perhaps hunting, fishing, farming, whatever. So all those dimensions are important. Thank you.
Next up, John Schaefer.
Hi, my name is John Schaefer, and most of you know me from having a business here in town. I grew up in Sydney, went to school in Sydney, graduated from Sydney. After that, I had joined the, I went to college up in Potsdam for a while. Then I joined the U.S. Army and served in the military police for 3 years. Following that, I returned to the area, largely working in pizzerias and for the Delaware County and Otsego County ARC, which was quite a rewarding experience, and really got to work with a special group of people. I helped open the house over here on Union Street many years ago, of course, in the credit union. Following that, I must have done that for a good 10 years or more. I started working with my parents in a family business. Many of you remember the Montgomery Ward catalog store, JCPenney. And then we evolved into a tire store, which I currently run and operate and have for probably the last 20 years now. I've served on the town board twice, two different times. One time was quite a time with the hospital. I was a bit of a whistleblower about what was happening when I got on the board. You can see the writing on the wall that there was trouble at the hospital. And I very much enjoyed working at that time and was one of the few to speak up and say we had a problem here and it needed to be solved. Thankfully, we now have Bassett Healthcare in the area. And it's turned out rather well for the town of Sydney. I would appreciate your support. And having me get on the town board, I can't say I have an agenda. I don't have issues that I just want to use a lot of common sense. And I see problems and I talk about them and I talk with everybody and make decisions. And thank you very much for having me here tonight. And I want to thank WCBO and the Daily Star for having us also. This is a great forum and appreciate it. Thank you.
Next up, Gregory McCann.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for all showing up. Mr. Sam Pollock, CEO, and all yous for venturing out in the weather tonight. My name is Gregory P. McCann, Jr. Most of the Sydney residents know me as Greggy, because my father was the original Greg. We've been up here our whole lives. I was raised in the city, which some people think is a downside, but I got a lot of training down there. We used to go to Sydney Center when I was a kid and my father was a kid. My father worked for some of the local farmers, Millard Finch. And most of us, the old timers, know my father because he worked with them. During my career as a police officer, I went to first grade detective and I was trained in a lot of different areas. One of the things I was trained in is community policing when they first started that. And where I worked it for 3 years to bring the community together and how to learn from different aspects. And as a representative of Sydney, I do not have a personal agenda. I was asked by most of the some prominent residents and business owners in the community to run in this election. I retired fully 3 years ago, and now I'm set to go back to work and work for everybody in the village of Sydney and the town of Sydney outside the village. There's a lot of things with the board meetings now. A lot of people do not get along, and it seems like Sydney became stagnant. There's a lot of things going on in Albany County. They're going to build a new convention center up there, or they're getting all these grants from the government. We have to have people going to Albany fighting for our grant money and all the other things that are going on. And it just seems that we're fighting in-house between ourselves. And I just want all the people to get together and all work for each other. And I just want to thank everybody again for coming out. I will try to represent you the best way I can. And if anybody has any questions, I will meet anybody. I met a few of the people. I'll meet you outside afterwards or tomorrow. They have my phone numbers and I have flyers. Thank you all, and thank you everybody for working.
Next is Bill Heath.
Thank you, Mr. Pollack. Thank you, CDO, for being here. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. I was actually born here in Sydney, grew up out of the area, returned about 27 years ago to start a career at then Keith Clark, now ACCO. Over my 27 years there, I think I've accumulated a lot of business experience. The last 10 years, I've been secretary for the Delaware Valley Humane Society. I think I've gained a lot of experience there that will help me on the town board if elected. And I'd like to see a lot more transparency as far as what's going on with the board. I think people need to know some of the things that are going on behind closed doors. I think that's got to be opened up. People need to have a voice, excuse me, and they need to be heard. So hopefully if elected, I can help that happen. Thank you.
Okay, all of these questions come from you. So our first question is, what do you believe is the most important and or significant issue facing the town of Sidney? And we'll start with Tobias Whitaker.
Well, I would have to say that, it would be jobs. Jobs would be the most significant issue facing Sidney currently. The catch is what sort of industry do we want in Sidney? What sort of industry do we want to bring in long-term in our community? You know, obviously Amphenol employs a significant number of people in the area, and it's extremely important that they stay in the area. What I would like to see is the area take a turn towards sustainable energy. Personally, from my perspective, I think that it's the cart before the horse. We need to go with solar and wind, maybe biofuel, and then have a discussion on natural gas to follow that. It seems that we're doing things backwards, and in order to keep these businesses in the area, we need to think long-term on that. Thank you.
Gene Pickford.
I made reference a minute ago to the comprehensive plan that Sidney had 10 years ago. It's my contention that if that plan were updated and we had a careful look at it, we would have a context to address virtually every other issue, both in the village and in the township and in the hamlet of Sidney and the other areas. There's not one issue that we are talking about today that was not mentioned in that plan 10 years ago. Ironically, some of the things we are still discussing now were mentioned 10 years ago. Some of them underscored with urgency that this is something that needs to happen sooner rather than later. So my first priority would be to very quickly revisit that and let that be our total context for decision making.
John Schaefer.
I agree that jobs is a big issue. That we don't chase away industry that may come. Just leave it open that people can come and go. One of the issues we brought up was the natural gas. And I think the Environmental Protection Agency has that role to decide if natural gas will come to the area in the way of the fracking and that. And I'm certainly no expert on that, and I wouldn't think anybody on the board is an expert or would think they were an expert unless they have a degree in environmental engineering. The biggest issue beyond that is the hospital. Bassett, their lease is going to be up for renewal, and I don't want to see us get in the same situation we were years ago where the town kind of may give away the store in the future and end up funding Bassett being here. I think a competitive outlook for the hospital in leasing to them, making sure that Sidney stays afloat and doesn't end up budgeting for the hospital. Let Bassett take care of the hospital and Sidney take care of Sidney. Thank you.
Gregory McCann.
Jobs is the most important thing to keep the economy flowing. But we need to bring in jobs that pay higher scales than minimum wage or $10 an hour. And we got to look into these companies, these high-tech companies. They just showed two on the news tonight, these electronic companies coming in. We got to start venturing out and offering them some kind of deals to get these higher-paying jobs that come in. Because the Sidney youth, most of the kids that I grew up that I know from Sidney moved out to other states to find better-paying jobs. And if you look around, there's not a lot of jobs that these guys can go do. They need to be trained. And if we do have companies coming in, if we can set up a training program right away to train the youths, 17, 18, 19, or when they come home from the Army, the Marines, the Navy, Air Force. We need to start training our youths, the youths, a little earlier to get them so they can start building here, and we have the people staying here instead of leaving and coming back when they retire. Thank you.
Bill Heath?
Well, I think I agree with everybody else that jobs are one of the most important issues with this town. I think how we get those jobs here is a larger issue with the way the economy is, and we've brought up natural gas. And I think that the issue about the natural gas bringing jobs to this area is one of the things that's tearing people apart here. We've got people on either side that are neighbors, family, that are at each other's throat because of that issue. And I think we need to really look at what, you know, what type of jobs we need to bring here. Again, technology, I think, is a good way. Alternative energy is another way. So I think there are alternatives to the natural gas. So thank you.
Would anyone like to respond to something anyone else said, or we can go on to the next question? We'll go on. What changes would you endorse or propose to inform and allow access to meetings and decisions of the town board? And we're going to begin this time with Gene Pickford.
I think most of the town board meetings are open. Anybody can attend. The attendance does vary between sometimes as low as 12, all the way up to a couple of hundred on different occasions, but they are open meetings. I think it would be enhanced if, when discussions are made in executive session, if there could be a fuller report following those sessions back to the board. That is a stipulation in the town manual that the state of New York has developed for town boards, and I think that would be helpful. One of the other thoughts early on 10 years ago was that the town board have a quarterly newsletter that they circulate both issues to be anticipated, issues to be discussed, and follow-up issues that have already been handled, and I think that would be a valuable resource for everybody in the community.
John Schaefer.
I think it would be a big help to allow a specific amount of time for the community to speak at town board meetings. So there's no question, there's no interruptions, and there's a designated time, or a certain length of time, to allow people from the community to speak. I think that would go a long way to helping along the meetings. Currently, we have a supervisor who is in charge of running the meetings. So as a councilman, you may not have very much say, but we can certainly encourage the supervisor to do so.
Gregory McCann.
Regarding the town board meetings, a few of you have seen me at the last year or so of meetings. It's open to the public, but instead of just having the town board meeting monthly to run the town, because it has to be run the town, business has to be taken care of. We have to take care of something. Same with the village board meetings. We should start having village and town hall meetings where everybody can come out and we have representatives from everybody so we can say what we need to be done. If somebody has a problem with something, we come and then we decide at the town hall meetings where everybody is present, every entity in the town and the village of Sydney, and we go. And then at the town board meetings, we can address the issue right away instead of having people argue all through the meetings and nothing gets accomplished. And then we start again. So town board meetings are open to the public, but which will make it better and fast-line things if we have village, like a village hall meeting, town hall meeting, all together. Have the village present, the town present, a police department member present, a fire department member present. They're not paid, so we can't force them, but I know somebody would come from the fire department.
Bill Heath.
And as everyone said, the board meetings are open to the public. They are, the public is not allowed to speak at the meetings. I do think we need a period of time somewhere during that meeting that the public can comment on either what's going on in the meeting or prior to the meeting they can bring up issues that should be discussed at the meeting. So yeah, open public speaking time would be a way to go.
Tobias Whitaker.
I would agree also that it comes down to communication. The last couple of board meetings, specifically, there hasn't been an open floor for the people in attendance to express their concerns. The meeting's just wrapped up and everybody kind of moves on their way. And going back to communication, I think that when somebody in the voting public approaches the board, it's because they have a concern. They have a crisis that they're facing, and that's why they're there. And so the board needs to take a step back and treat them like an individual instead of belittling them and being condescending and cutting them off before they have an opportunity to express their grievance. Thank you.
Any rebuttal? Any comments? Okay, we'll go on. Where do you stand on taking private land by eminent domain for the Constitution Pipeline? And we will begin with John Schaefer.
I think eminent domain is required because that's how our country has come to grow so big and be competitive worldwide. When you have a pipeline coming from the south going to the north, I think it has to be open to the public to make the comments like they are doing and having hearings. You know, there's a, to me, the argument is a direct route, going through less property, better affect less people versus the alternate route along I-88, which may actually encompass more properties because they go around differently than a direct route. So eminent domain, I'm not against it because if it weren't for eminent domain, you wouldn't have I-88 through here. We wouldn't have a lot of things in this country that we need. But certainly the public has to have the right to put in their two cents as to what's the best route for the community and go from there.
Gregory McCann.
I'm not for eminent domain, but as America to move forward, sometimes some people's lives do get interrupted. It's not about one person or one family or one piece of property. It's about all of us. We'll never survive as a town if we can't get along. And if the pipeline's going to go through, if only one person doesn't want it, then I'm against it, but somebody's going to have to do so. If the majority of people want it, this country was built on the majority, what everybody wants, not what one group or the loudest yelling group or one rich person wants. It's about what every person has and every person has a vote. So with the pipeline going through, we didn't have a say on it. The government kind of forced it. And now, but it's going to go through. Let's use what we can to get back stuff to help our community. And I don't want to see anybody's property taken from it, but I can't just put one person ahead of the whole community. We have to move forward and get into the 22nd and 21st century.
Bill Heath.
I believe that there is a purpose for eminent domain, but using it for the Constitution Pipeline is not one of them. When 88 went through, they did use eminent domain to put the highway through connecting Binghamton with Albany. There was a purpose for that. To give our land to a private company, I do not believe that's a good use of eminent domain. I don't think they've shown the need for that pipeline to go through here to be able to take our property.
Tobias Whitaker.
I can be short and sweet on this. I'm not for eminent domain on any level. And the irony is, this is the liberal saying this to you. I mean, is there anything more invasive than having the government step in and saying that we're going to take your property for profits, for corporate profits? That's what this boils down to. And I would have to say respectfully that I think it's more than one person who would be against it. So when you have a large group of people who don't want their property taken for business owners to make money off of their property, their personal belongings, that's wrong. It's not something that I believe in whatsoever.
Gene Pickford.
I believe the rights of all property owners should be respected. There are many people that are for the pipeline coming through and they would welcome it. There are other people that are strongly opposed to it. I think the pipeline, like any other business, has a responsibility to negotiate in an effective way with everybody involved, but the final word should be if a person is totally opposed to it, then there ought to be an alternative solution, or there ought to be some negotiation where that property owner is adequately compensated. And I suspect under the proceedings of eminent domain, the property owner winds up with a substandard offer that is not in keeping with the true value of their property.
Okay. Do we have any rebuttals? Any comments?
Okay.
What cost-saving proposals would you wish to investigate? Merging of village and town, elimination of permanent legal counsel, privatizing the hospital building. And we will begin this with Gregory McCain.
To look into the first with the hospital. I do not have records or the books of the hospital. Some people have information because they sit on the meetings at the board now, and they have more information on that. So I have to look into the books. The only thing that scares me with the hospital is only Onto was sued for over $100 million, and they just lost the lawsuit. So I don't think the town of Sydney could hold up to a lawsuit with that. None of us would be here anymore because we wouldn't be able to afford to pay $100 million. Now, to go back to merge the village and the town, it is so busy out there right now. I don't know if you go down to the courts. You have court dates for town and the village, and the line's out the door some days. So everybody says that's a good cost-effective budget, but it won't be cost-effective because it's never going to get done, and the court case will be put over. And then we already have a beautiful facility in the village. Why would we want to bring it and move it somewhere else? And we have to build it. Everything has to be federally guidelines to build a court and a jail cell and that. And if you're going to merge it, then we're going to lose the Sydney Village PD.
Bill Heath.
As far as the hospital for cost savings, I don't believe we should be landlords. I believe that currently with Bassett and Amphenol being in the hospital, yes, they're showing a profit. But once Amphenol leaves, we're not going to see that. I do believe that we should actually sell that building before that happens. So that would be a savings in the long run for us. As far as other issues, as far as cost savings, I'd have to really take a good look at the budget to see where we could really do any kind of cost savings. So until I do that, I don't think I can really comment on other things. So,
Tobias Whitaker.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can get too specific on a lot of the answers. It obviously makes sense to have an attorney. That would be for the benefit of everybody. As far as the hospital goes, you know, as Bill had mentioned, we are in a situation where right now there is a profit. The problem is that we're relying on Amphenol coming in after natural disasters to take place. We need permanent tenants in there. And so it would make more sense for us to get out of the landlord business. I don't think that that's necessarily something that the town of Sydney has to directly be involved in, even though it's obviously a very good thing that Bassett is in our community.
Gene Pigford.
I think that's a hard question to respond to, at least in part because I don't think any of us really have definitive information on the totality of the town's resources, budgets, how they interface. And so to prioritize which of those options would be the most cost-effective, I think that's the kind of information we would need to deliberate on before we can make a specific recommendation. I think prior to that question, we need to have, as a town, full fiscal information on the present status of all aspects of that budget.
Okay. John Schaefer.
I think this would be the best opportunity to unload the hospital property. There's a big difference between a hospital and a property. The town owns the property. The hospital leases the property. Right now is the time, like a young man said, we're making a profit. We're doing well. We should get rid of the hospital property at this point and make it privatized. The town government shouldn't be in the hospital business. I can just see the writing on the wall 4, 6, 7 years from now when Amphenol is gone and Bassett maybe might be struggling and taking the town help out, and we're back into the same cycle we were previously with the hospital. And I think that should be a priority at this time. While we're doing good there, it's more lucrative to sell at this point.
Okay, would anyone like to comment or expand on your remarks? Yes, sir, Mr. McCain.
When you move into a town, they want to see a hospital. So I agree we should sell the property. It's a big risk having a hospital. But we have to do something in the structure to keep it a hospital for the town and the village people. We can't just sell the hospital because they could turn it into whatever they wanted to. Because I know other companies tried buying the building from the town in the past, but the thing was, we always wanted a hospital in the town of Sydney. The closest hospital would be only on for them. That's all I got to say. I understand the risk.
Anyone else? Okay. Would you work and try to keep the East Sydney Park open or close it? And we will begin with Bill Heath.
That's a tough question. again, I'm not sure that the town belongs in the park business, but that is a property that has always been with the town since its inception, and I know that it has been a moneymaker at times. I don't know that this year was one of those. I think it takes a lot of our resources to run that and to keep it a viable business. So I would say I would not be in that business. So
Tobias Whitaker.
I would have to agree with you there, Bill. I don't think that I would be involved in the business either. And it simply goes back to being a landlord. In this position. And I know this year was supposed to be a good year with the weather, and it turned out that the dam didn't actually make the money that it was supposed to make this year. So, you know, it's nice to have it in the community, and it obviously brings tourism, but once again, is that a role that the town should be playing? I would personally step back on that one.
Gene Pickford.
I would agree with Tobias for the most part. I think we would do well to channel our energies in other directions. Having said that, I think prior to disposing of it, we should explore what a scenario would look like, who would take it over, how would it be run, and would that scenario be a better one for the town than the present one? And I think prior to a final decision, that process should be investigated.
John Schaefer.
I guess I disagree with everybody on this point. East Sydney Dam is an asset to the community. It's property that the town gets to use for free thanks to the Army Corps of Engineers. You can't beat a deal like that. The money that we take in is spent on operating that facility, and it's a bargain for the community, a bargain for the residents, and to give it up, I think, is just out of the question. I can see making an extra effort for management of East Sydney Dam to be by somebody outside the town government, but to take it out of the town's hands when it's just handed to the town like that and has been a resource for this community and a recreation facility for so many years is out of the question.
Gregory McCann.
The town should definitely keep the property. One of the assets is what you own in life, your property. Everybody's saying about the pipeline coming through. That's one of the town's biggest properties, the East Sydney Dam. I grew up going to there. A lot of people stopped going there. We got to start advertising it more to get back. It's a beautiful area, and once you get rid of something, you can never get it back. We'll never get the dam back. And they said, well, we don't have time to put our energy somewhere else. That's easy to be taken care of, the East Sydney Dam. And I don't understand that. I'm here to work for the people of Sydney, and I want the people to come out to the dam, and I will go there and work for them to bring the dam back, to make sure the bathrooms are okay and the town. We only had, they said something like 50-something percent occupancy last year. We got to advertise more, bring more people back. All business in Sydney and the village of Sydney will be helped from that because you'll have more people entering the area. Thank you.
Any further comments? Okay.
If I may, I don't, I guess what I want to say is that I don't think the dam ought to be a permanent liability. Certainly it is an asset, certainly it can be a benefit to the community, but if year after year, and I don't know that this is the case, but if year after year it continues to show a deficit and take resources from the town that could be very well used in other directions, then I think a serious look needs to be taken at it. I like John's idea about maybe having somebody that's more professionally versed in running that, take a serious look at what that would entail for the town.
Anyone else? Could you address the subject of conflict of interest and adherence to the current code of ethics in Sydney? What about a board of ethics and penalties? And we will begin again with Tobias Whitaker.
Make it all the easy ones. So, you know, I think right now that they have that. I think the problem is that it's self-imposed, right? They're supposed to police themselves. So I think maybe what, in best case scenario, would need to take place is that the voting public would need to step forward with petitions, which I believe they already have. And I believe that it would be the responsibility of the town's attorney to then enforce that activity.
Gene Pickford.
I think every town board member takes an oath of office, and that oath, while it is not complicated, is a very direct one, and says that you will uphold the responsibilities of a town council person or whatever, and will support the processes as defined in the state of New York, or words to that effect. I think anyone running for this position ought to be able to declare quite openly that they do not have a conflict of interest, that they're open for public scrutiny or accountability in whatever way the town chooses to define that. And I think we all ought to be comfortable with that, including those that are presently on the board.
There is a code of ethics, and everybody should follow it, and that's in place. I think it's up to the individual councilman to know enough to not vote on something that there is a direct conflict on, and the community should point out, as I'm sure they would and they should, what they perceive as a conflict of interest. But hopefully any individual board member will choose not to vote on an issue and say so in public.
Thank you, John Schaefer. Gregory McCann.
There is an ethics in there, but it's self-policed, like we brought up. What we could do is have appoint two people, one from each side, a Democrat and Republican, to review some of the meetings and see if it's being overseen as the right way. Nobody's getting out of control at the meetings. Because everybody has to be treated like an adult and a human. We can't go and yell and scream at each other. I think that's where this question came from somebody out there. With some of the meetings, it's a half hour yelling some nights. And it's not, you belittle people when you just start screaming back and forth at each other. Everybody around you. So they should be, there is an ethics involved, but it is not being policed because it's self-policed.
Bill Heath.
Yes, I do know there is a code of ethics, and I know when everyone takes the oath when they're elected to the town board, that is part of that oath to uphold the code of ethics. And yeah, I believe it is self-policed. I believe that everyone should own up to that and declare or not vote if there is a conflict. And I do think the public has a right to bring that up if they see a conflict of interest or a break in the code of ethics. They need to bring that up. So it's everybody should be watching what the town is doing.
And I'm going to intercede here because I don't think any of you gentlemen answered the second part of the question. Can we give you an extra 30 seconds? What about a board of ethics and penalties? Tobias Whitaker.
I think I did, Mr. Pollack. I think that having the attorney follow through on that in itself would go through and enforce the penalties. I'm not sure what the specific penalties are for somebody in that position, though. Do you lose your seat? Is there a fine? Does the vote get tossed to the side? So that's my angle on it.
Gene Pickford.
I'm not aware what the penalties are in place at the present for failure to fulfill the duties of the office. And I would see that if you're violating the code of ethics, in some fashion you have violated the role of your office, and what the accountability process for that is, I don't know, but I hope there is one.
John Schaefer.
It would seem that if you violated the code of ethics, you should be impeached. Simple, case closed.
Gregory McCann.
If you held in violation of the code of ethics as a town council after you're sworn in, you will be removed from office. Or like people you'll see that just will disclose their position, just quit right away. But you violation of the code of ethics, it's not yelling with somebody or getting into an argument. There's some major infractions. And that's why when they say penalty, what do you mean penalties? You can't vote at one meeting? You can't go to a meeting? You got to keep the town functioning.
Bill Heath.
Yes, I'm not aware what the penalties are for breaking the code of ethics, but there should be, and I think that if there aren't any penalties, then I think we should create them. And it should probably be up to the attorney, the town's attorney, to enforce that. But again, I think the public needs to be aware of what's going on, keep an eye on that, and bring it up so that the attorney can do something about it. Yeah.
Any other comments? Okay. How do you plan to deal with all the problems a pipeline and fracking would cause the town? And we will begin with Gene Pickford.
Let me split them apart, if I may. One is the pipeline, and the other is fracking. As I said earlier, I think the pipeline ought to be rooted in such a way that it does not adversely impact anybody's property who doesn't want it. I think there are present easements in place where that could be accomplished. That probably would not be the pipeline company's preference because it would cost them more, be more inconvenient. But I think out of respect for property owners that that is the way it needs to go. As far as fracking is concerned, I think a great deal of research still needs to be done before assurances can be given that that is a safe and positive process. Every reading that I have looked at, including materials from Cornell University and the University of Buffalo, is the universities themselves are having a great deal of difficulty getting objective information about all the implications of the pipeline. Because all the information that the public gets is skewed one way or the other, either pro or con.
John Schaefer.
I think the town should make a special effort to make sure that our roads are protected and rebuilt after heavy use, if that kind of an industry should come here. That's very important. I understand in Pennsylvania they've done that, and roads have been built twice as good as they were before that kind of industry came to town.
Okay. Gregory McCann.
The question was, how would we protect the town if the pipeline and fracking come to the town?
How do you plan to deal with all the problems a pipeline and fracking would cause to town?
So they're already assuming we have the fracking in town. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure, sir.
With all that, we'd have to hold the companies reliable right away from day one, with the roads, with the infrastructure, with the housing of bringing outside laborers in here to do the work. Because a lot of people heard about these work camps they built. And that's a bad thing because then people aren't held accountable. They come and they disappear. They go back to Texas or wherever they're finding the cheaper labor from. So as soon as day one, we have to get IDs from everybody coming in to work. And this is already, like I said, the question was assuming that we got it. We'll have to check it with the fracking. With the pipeline, we have to protect it with making sure the pipeline's checked on its regular schedule, that there's no misdamage or any misuse of it or terrorist stuff going to try to blow it up. That's, like I said, the question was already asked, and it's already in place.
Bill Heath.
My first reaction would be to stop them both from coming through in the first place, but if we're assuming that they're already here, then we definitely need to hold the companies that are here accountable, because I believe that with some of the problems that I'm hearing about with the health issues, the crime, the road use, there a lot of that is beyond the town's capability to fix. In some cases, the water issues in Dimmock, it's beyond the town's beyond their means to fix those issues. So my first reaction is stop them from coming in the first place.
Tobias Whitaker.
Well, once again, assuming that it was already here, I think it would be the sort of situation where it obviously wouldn't hurt to approach a community who is already dealing with a fracking issue or a pipeline issue and see what type of safeguards they put into place to protect their town, also to take a look at maybe some of the negative effects and how you could end up creating a roadblock in your area on that. You know, the obvious thing too is to hold the company responsible as well. I had one other thing on that, now my mind kind of went blank, but okay, I'll leave it right there.
Okay, we'll give you another shot at it. Let's, we may have put the cart before the horse in that last question. Let's go to, before fracking gets in here, what are your thoughts on home rule in the state of New York? And that's basically designed to give townships the ability to forbid fracking in this area. So we are going to begin with John Schaefer.
I think that no industry should be picked out and prohibited ahead of time. You know, if you pick out one industry, you need to pick, you can pick out other industries. I think the Environmental Protection Agency has a clear job of regulating and deciding if fracking shouldn't even come. But for the town government, for a town board, that's primary responsibility is taking care of the finances of the town, taking care of town projects. It shouldn't be involved with the issue, especially when professionals statewide are already dealing with the issue.
Gregory McCann.
I totally agree with the home rule. I'm here to represent the people. And if the vote went whichever way the majority of the people won, the fracking or against the fracking, that's the way my vote would go. That's the way I stood on this from day one. That's why people ask me. I do not have a private agenda with fracking. I do not own anything in the oil company. I do not own hundreds of acres somewhere in Delaware County. And my representation for the people would be home rule. And both sides don't like this, the pro and con, because everybody's trying to push their side in front of the other. But if we all voted on it and we found out which way the community wants, I would represent the community. I would back the community 100%.
Bill Heath.
I definitely agree with home rule. I believe that every town has that right to decide whether an industry like this should come in or not. We have a responsibility to protect our people, our land, their health. And I think we have the right to do that.
Tobias Whitaker.
Home rule. I'm all for it. I think that it's an example of democracy at its best. The local people have a voice, decide what they want done with their area. The one thing I would like to point out, though, is that you can't have home rule and also support eminent domain.
Gene Pickford.
With a vast experience of a one-day seminar at the Albany Law School, and they suggested to us that the strongest thing a town could do would be to have a comprehensive master plan in place that totally defines the environment of their town, not specifically focused against any particular industry, be it gas or anything else, but defining the nature of the atmosphere they want, the ecology they want to maintain, stress on their roads, and every other aspect of the community. If that's defined in a master plan, that is the strongest statement a community can make in response to giving definition to industries like the gas that will come through.
Anybody want to expand or question anything? Okay. The governor has imposed a 2% tax cap on town budgets. How do you plan on not exceeding this cap with the rising costs of wages, pensions, health insurance, and utilities increasing greater than 2% annually? And we will begin with Gregory McCann.
To look at the budgets, I have to see all the numbers, and we're not privy to see that being outside the board sometimes. To go under 2%, I would not have a layoff. We could, if we had to cut jobs, it would be by attrition after people retire. But it can be done, and it can be kept under. We'd have to tighten the belts up for the overtime and other things that we spend money on. But, and sometimes you can go over that 2% tax levy or rule that the governor put in if there's a special cause, if the flood or something tragic happened, or we need money because
a building fell down or a road collapsed. There is ways to go around that 2% cap. Thank you.
Bill Heath.
Again, without knowing all of the numbers within the budget and exactly where things can be cut and things like that, I just think we need to show some fiscal responsibility and actually use the money we have and the money we bring in through taxes accordingly and show a lot of fiscal responsibility while doing that.
Tobias Whitaker.
I'm in the same boat as a lot of these guys, you know, without seeing the specifics. I know at this point, if the information I have is correct, though, that we're in a situation where there's a 0% increase we're looking at this particular year. I don't know if that's something that we necessarily even have to worry about at this point. I think the other thing we need to keep in mind, too, is that we can be responsible with the budget while at the same time making sure that we continue to maintain our roads and to maintain the health of the overall community as far as infrastructure and things along those lines. We definitely have a little bit of flexibility on the budget at this point.
Gene Pickford.
I'm not sure that the governor's mandate ought to be the driving force that keeps the 2%. I understand it, but maybe that motivation ought to come from our own level. That our community is about at the maximum level of what it can pay tax-wise, and so we need to be our own best stewards in that area and manage our dollars carefully and well so that the level we have is still a workable one.
John Schaefer.
You keep the 2% cap by going through each and every line of the budget and making sure you're not more than 2%. There was a big effort to pass a local law to override the 2% tax cap, which I vehemently oppose. I think that's the one thing Governor Comer, I can give him lots of praise and credit for, is coming out with that 2% cap. Landowners, year after year, were facing 3, 4, and 5% tax increases in many communities. Governor Comer had the wisdom to look and say, you know, that's not sustainable. And I praise that law, and I wouldn't override it for any reason.
Any comments?
One other thing.
Sure.
We have reserve funds for emergencies. You know, you talked about times you would override it. That's the importance of having set money aside every year for these unexpected things like floods and et cetera.
Anybody want to comment? Okay. Can you, without simply reciting the usual generic platitudes of more jobs or lower taxes or prosperity for all, articulate a vision for Sydney and our region 5 years from now, 10 years? What do you want to see? And we will begin, I think, with John Schaefer.
I'd like to see the door open for all sorts of people to come into town and all sorts of businesses. I wouldn't single out certain businesses and prohibit. I think everybody should be welcome to the community. 5 years from now, I look forward to the integration of many many different people. I welcome the Muslim community that came to Sydney Center, and I think it's just wonderful to have all these groups of people coming to town, and I hope to see 5 and 10 years from now a very large diversity of people here in Sydney, as we've seen down in New York City and in cities all over the world. All over the country.
Gregory McCain.
First of all, within the first 5 years, I would like to have the unemployment dropped and the hourly rate for jobs in the area raised for the average job. Because people making minimum wage cannot support it. So the first thing I would want to do is bring the salaries up from the companies and have companies come in that will pay a little bit more to get the people. That would be the first thing in 5 years, to get the unemployment down and salaries up a little bit. Within 10 years, I'd like to see businesses come in, opening up, having the James Lloyd place all cleared out and all brand new stores in there, and extending the town further and have more corporations coming back. Maybe get another exit off I-88 for the town of Sydney. All this makes for bigger business and more people coming in. That will not happen within a year or two, but the five-year plan is to lower the unemployment rate, have more people go back out to working so they feel sustainable, And then the 10-year plan would be have more people coming in off the highways to get other money from just the residents in Sydney supporting themselves.
Bill Heath.
Wow, this is a tough one. Without using the jobs and businesses come in and things like that, my vision for Sydney in the next 5 to 10 years, I believe, would be to keep this area as clean as it is now and not wreck it. I think the environment is the biggest issue here, and that's why a lot of people have come here, is for the beauty of this area. And I don't think we want to destroy that. I think we want to bring some more prosperity to the area, but not ruin the image that we have. So.
Tobias Whitaker.
I would like to see us come together as a community. I would like to see different activities taking place all throughout the year, festivals, things along those lines, bringing, some sort of, let's be known for something. Other people in the area want to travel to Sydney to take part in maybe some sort of agricultural festival or some sort of arts festival, something along those lines. I also agree with Bill, that the nature that we're surrounded by is one of our greatest assets. I would like to see it stay the way that it is. I think that you can be prosperous and also come together as a community while at the same time making healthy, positive choices. I really believe that.
Keane Pickford.
I concur with everybody's comments. My only additional comment is all of what we are talking about is referenced in a master plan. If you read the one of 10 years ago, you would have read, for example, some of the needs of Sydney Center, one of their critical needs, for septic. That was in that plan 10 years ago. Now, if we had held ourselves accountable for that 10-year process, not only on that issue, but on every other issue, and developed a strategy to address those things, even if it's on a multi-year continuum or seeking specialized funding, we wouldn't be reading 10 years later that they still have a problem with that area. Hopefully, in the next 10 years could be defined, and we could hold ourselves accountable in such a way that all these other very good ideas could indeed come to pass. But they don't just happen. You strategize for them, and you work towards making them happen.
Any other comments? Okay, Mr. Pickford, you touched on this item, but we'll give everyone a shot at it. What would be your position on the town providing the $16,750 the Sydney Center Improvement Group needs to pay for the engineering study to design building a septic system for the hamlet to put them in a position to qualify for grants and loans to build this system? And this is the first time Mr. Bates has descended into the sewer. So we will we'll begin with Gregory McCann.
It's easy to just say, yes, give the $16,000 to the people that live in the hamlet. I knew the hamlet when it was just woods. I ran through them woods. But I don't have the town budget. I don't know if the town budget, this was brought up at the last Sydney Town Board meeting. I don't see the budget. So I can come up here and tell everybody, yeah, just give them the money. But I'd be lying. And I can't promise you that because I don't know how much is left in the budget this year. Maybe we could put a few thousand away this year and a few thousand away next year. But if I come up here and say, yes, let's go through it, it's just blowing smoke in the air. Thank you.
Bill Heath.
I'm going to say yes, I would give them the money. I don't know what's in the budget this year. I know we have a 0% increase for next year. I believe that through what is in the funds that exist, the reserve, wherever that would come from, I believe that the money is there. And it's the first step for Sydney Center to make that step to whether it's a septic system, community septic, or some sort of sewer treatment. We don't know until that study is done. And I believe that once the study is done, to create whatever that system is going to be done through grants, or at least tried to be done through grants. So I think we need to give them that first step to get that where they need to be.
Tobias Whitaker.
Mr. Cordes had brought this up at the last board meeting, so among other things, I'd taken the time to look into the issue. I'm under the impression that if the $16,750 were granted, it wouldn't actually have a drastic effect on the current tax situation. It's not going to push us over the 2% tax cap. The other thing is, there are issues that are a lot more important than money. We're neighbors, we're a small community. Why would the local government want to impede the progress of Sydney Center, who has been ignored for an extremely long time by our town government? The other thing is, if we don't go through and take care of it now, and this is a conversation Bill Heath and I had a while back, this is a potential public health issue, and we're going to have to take care of it down the road. So it is going to cost us money. I think we need to step up as neighbors and take care of one another. And in order for them to get the money to step forward, they need Lamont Engineering to come in and do this, take a look at the properties.
Gene Pickford.
I've had the privilege of attending the last two Sydney Center meetings discussing this issue. And first I want to say what a tremendous resource the community of Sydney Center has been, and some of the initiatives that are transpiring there are just wonderful. I think that there may be some grant funds available for a part of it. I would like to see the town be in a position of sitting down with representatives from Sydney Center, finding out what their seed money needs are, be it 20% or whatever the amount would be, and making sure that we are able to support that so they can get the other kind of grants they need to proceed with this study. It may be that we don't need to fund the total 16.5. It might be that we could fund 20% of it and assist them in finding grant money to cover the rest, but that needs to be explored.
John Schaefer.
Sydney Center is a small hamlet that's not on a state road. It's on a town and a county road. I would rather see the sewer system from the village of Sydney and on enlarged from this source. While I emphasize with the sewer problem there, or the, you know, a grant of that large magnitude, the budget is roughly $2 million, so 2% is about $40,000. We already likely have a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 increase just from year to year in the budget, and I just think it would be irresponsible to throw that kind of money there for that reason at this time. I understand the need to work out the problems with the sewer there, or there maybe four or five houses to get together and agree to use one resource for their sewer. But the idea of a whole sewer system, I just don't think it's feasible at this time.
Yes, Ms. Pickford.
I think we're talking about two different things. I'm referring to an engineering study that is necessary prior to anything else being done. John is referring to the whole project, which is another major undertaking. I think, first of all, we need to get the engineering study done so we understand what the issues are, and then we have something to look at specifically in terms of how to proceed from there.
Yes, Mr. Whitaker.
I would also like to kind of add on to that. There are certain things you need to spend money on, and people living potentially in their own sewage is one of those issues that we need to spend money on. And as Mr. Pickford said, this is simply just to bring Lamont Engineering in. That's the first step. That's all that they're asking to do. And I think it would be a great idea to sit down and have an open discussion.
Any other comments? Yes, sir.
I think a discussion about it is fine, but the town's responsibility is the roads and the highways, and we have a clear designated responsibility. The village is different. They have a sewer system, and they have a sewer, you know, contracts. I know we pay for sewer in the village, the residents themselves. City Center, if they can, I just don't envision that being a feasible solution to have a complete sewer system in a small hamlet on a town and county road as opposed to a growing town on a state road like the village of Sydney on an interstate. There's plenty of room to grow.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Yes, Mr. Pickford.
All I'm saying is we don't know what we need until we do the engineering study. And before we get that done, we're really kind of spinning our wheels and talking in the dark. We need the engineering study done as soon as possible.
Anything else? Okay. I'm going to take a personal privilege of asking a question. No one has asked it. I'd like to know how the floods have changed this county, this area, and have changed you, and the way you look at life and the way you look at how you go about your daily lives. in whatever way you'd like to tell us. And we will begin with Bill Heath.
The floods of 2006 and 2011 actually did not affect our property at all, but it did affect our lives. We work very closely with the Humane Society. My wife is president, I'm secretary. And during those floods, we actually were helping people rescue animals out of this village, setting up sites where people take their animals. And you see what happens with a flood firsthand when you're downtown. And it affects everybody in the town, whether they were flooded or not. And I think it brings everybody a little bit closer. And personally, it brought me to see what the people in Sydney are like. Everybody was willing to help everybody else. So I'm just proud to be here.
Mr. Whitaker.
As far as the floods go, I'm sure there's nobody in this community that on one level or another wasn't affected by the floods, regardless if you were directly in the path of the water or simply knew somebody who was. From my perspective, I'm at the point now where going door to door speaking with people, I keep hearing a common story that's from Oak Ave all the way over to Bridge Street, and people want to talk about the flood. But what they want to talk about is they want to talk about how their neighbors turned around and helped them out, how they gave them water, how they gave them food, how they helped them get out of the area when the flood was coming in. And that's the sort of thing I think as a community that we should be proud of, that people step up to the bat, up to the plate, and help one another out. And maybe what we could take away from this is that there are people in our community who aren't waiting for disaster to happen to step up. There's those of us that want to help before we get to that point. So, thank you.
Mr. Pickford.
I'm recently retired. Well, recently 2 years. I spent 40 years as an officer in the Salvation Army. In the floods of 2002 and 2006, it was our privilege to be supplying food, supplying canteens, supplying all kinds of things, and working with FEMA, with this community, and helping them get reestablished. I agree with Toby's comments and some of the others that the groundswell of support in this community and the extra mile stepping out, I think of Jackie and some shelter initiatives of 24 hours and how are we going to get the next meal coming through and all of those kinds of things. But what a marvelous working together there was in this community. And people have not only survived, they've grown and become stronger. I think one word of caution is we need to take a look as a community, as a town, and make sure that we are not vulnerable to similar floods. And what do we need to do at this point in time to make sure that we don't have a repeat occurrence of that? And that's true on many levels.
Mr. Schaefer.
Andy Maviak, Jamie Roberts showed how the town and the village can come together. Seeing the town trucks right downtown, I was in two floods, so it impacted me. I got to the point where I can't wait for the next flood because I think that's the best way to approach it. But I really was heartwarmed by the way the town came right into the town with the village. And boy, you talk about the town and the village working together. We have two highway departments, and what a great thing we can achieve if we try and combine resources between the town and the village, which I think we should be one of the priorities in the future with the town government.
Mr. McCann.
I had all my house up during the second flood, and it really didn't affect my house or my parents' house. But it was great to see the town and the village and everybody come together during a disaster. But what I want to see more with the town is to come together. We don't need a natural disaster. Let's all come together and start working together. Help people get through the snow. Help people shovel the elderly, shovel sidewalks. It's always great, and like it was great pride ever since 9/11 to see everybody in New York and America come together, which is great. But let's not wait for the next natural disaster to come together. Now people go back and they don't talk to their neighbors no more. They don't go out. They're starting to get back complacency again. It's only been a little over a year. But let's have everybody go back out and help each other. Just try to be nice to everybody.
Anyone have anything else to add? Okay. We've come to the time of the closing statements. Before we get to that, I'd like to mention that WCDO will broadcast this debate in its entirety tomorrow after the 6 o'clock news, and we'll broadcast it again Monday, November 5th, after the 6 o'clock news. It will also be on the Internet following the broadcast tomorrow on WCDOradio.com, where you can see it at any time. We'll now go to the closing statements, 2 minutes duration, and we'll begin with Tobias Whitaker.
Thank you. Once again, I'd like to thank everybody for taking part. It's great to see so many people come out, especially with the weather and things like that. I can keep this pretty simple. I can wrap this up for you. My perspective on this whole thing is that we're in a situation where our town government is not currently functioning in an efficient manner. It's not functioning properly. I think that it really boils down to communication. If somebody approaches the town board, they should be able to speak to the town board, air their grievance without being belittled, or just simply not even given the opportunity to speak. I think that we need to learn to come together as a community, and as I had said in the beginning, to kind of bring this full circle, it doesn't matter to me if you're a Republican. I don't care if you're Democrat or any of the third parties that are independent. All of you will have a voice with me. I would like the opportunity to be your voice on the town board, and I would sincerely appreciate it if you would consider voting for me on November 6th. Thank you for your time.
Gene Pickford.
Robert Fulghum wrote a book, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. I'd like to suggest that that would be good reading for all of us, including the town board members. And my only other thought to you is, on election day, when you look at your ballot, if you go all the way down and to the right, that's where I am. That's my position on the ballot. It's not my political position. Please understand that differentiation. I, too, would like to thank my fellow candidates for their support and opportunity for conversation and for everyone who was instrumental in bringing this together. Thank you.
John Schaefer.
I'd like to thank everybody for getting together tonight, especially Sue Slenerick for helping organize this event. If elected, I will do my best to represent you the best I can. I don't have an agenda. I will make honest decisions about everything that comes before me. I enjoyed serving on the board of the past and hope I can do that for you in the future.
Gregory McCann.
I'd like to thank everybody, too, for coming, taking their time out of their lives. When I was approached earlier this year to run for office, I didn't really want to do it. But people asked me, you always had reasonable. I could get people to come together. And everybody laughed, like, how'd you get them talking again? It's just a knack I have, a natural knack. And all I do is want to get everybody to come together and have the town and the village us all work together to make the whole area a better situation. I have no personal agendas. I am here to represent the people. I will put my political, any politics that might not disagree with the town as a community on the side. Sometimes you have to do what you might not to help everybody out. It's what the people of the town of Sydney want, not what other people want or people who will yell louder or have more money than the next person. Everybody has a vote. That's why America is one of the greatest countries. And they talked me into it by saying, we know you would be honest and you would come out and talk to everybody in the town, the village, and anybody else who would need help. And that's why I'm here. And I just hope everybody comes out, at least vote on November 6th, because a lot of people never vote. And it kind of gets annoying. That's one of our God American rights to do. And I just want to thank everybody for coming out in the weather. And if you vote for me, I will be out there. Everybody, when you get to know me, they call me Greggy. I'm on the Main Street, Sydney Center. Everybody knows me. You might not have known me because a lot of people didn't realize Gregory P. McCann Jr. was the Greggy they all grew up with.
Bill Heath.
I guess I could say ditto, but again, thank you everybody for coming out tonight. Thank you for moderating tonight. Thank you, CDO, for recording this and playing it back tomorrow night. I guess I would say, unlike everybody else, I kind of do have an agenda. I want to see a lot more transparency with this town board. I want people to know what's going on and to know where this town's going. I think the people should have a bigger voice in what's happening in this town. So if elected, I will do my best to do that.
Okay, I think that the citizens in this area are incredibly well served by these five candidates. if they're surpassed by anything, it is by the constituents, you who came out on this night to watch and learn about your candidates. Let's give them and yourselves a big hand, please. That is our debate. Please go out and vote and have a good night.